Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the limited liability story right after this. You know, the income tax and Social Security programs are not compatible with our traditional American values, and that's because these two programs encompass the second and the eighth planks to the Communist Manifesto. It is a foreign and alien ideology. Traditional American values are based upon individual responsibility in place of Social Security and tithing in place of the income tax. These two foreign and alien ideologies require of us that we violate three of the Ten Commandments and eight statutes of the Old Covenant. We covet our neighbor's property, and then we're taught to call that income redistribution. We steal from our neighbors with unjust weights and measures called Federal Reserve notes. And then we practice idolatry by signing contracts with these foreign and alien gods that we call government. And we're not getting away with these crimes either. We're now paying up to 74% of everything that we create and produce in taxes. We live in mortgaged homes owned by the savings and loan companies. We drive cars owned by GMAC or Ford Motor Finance. The average family of four has a $70,000 consumer debt. We have a $12 trillion national debt. We're a surety for another $100 trillion of unfunded government obligations in our financial institutions. Are leveraged out to more than $100 trillion. Worldwide. Our Social Security retirement system is a chain letter Ponzi scheme, and we're living from paycheck to paycheck and taught to call all of this prosperity. Well, you know, the God of Israel gave us a better way of life than that, and our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 followed that better way. Now, if you'd like to learn more about tax and status and a better way of life, why don't you call and ask for our four-hour compact disc package? It's educational, it's entertaining, and it's informative, and best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number's 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, click on to our archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. That's georgegordon.org, and then go to the archives page. Limited liability. It also goes hand in hand with the law enforcement growth industry. And in trying to appraise this issue of law enforcement, courts, prisons, punishment, crime, rehabilitation, the death penalty, incarceration, cruel and unusual punishment, and on it goes. You know, much has been written and much more is going to be written, but one point that everybody seems to agree upon is that crime is out of control and something ought to be done about it. Now, we're taught on this side of the big ditch that this is America, the land of the free and the home of the brave. We refer to Russia, China, and other places like North Korea as police states. But the facts tell us another story. The facts show us that this country holds more people per capita in our jails than do the Russians, the Chinese, or the North Koreans. The Russians, for instance, have one-third the number of people incarcerated as we do here in America. In reality, the citizens of America are living in a police state, and they're totally unaware of it. And there's very little difference between our government and the one in Poland or Russia or China or North Korea. Let me show you. Let's take these governments that we're mentioning over here. Do these nations have national identification cards? Do any of these countries allow their citizens to drive without driver's licenses? Looking at Russia, Poland, China, North Korea, etc., do these people in those countries work wherever they want to? Do those citizens in those countries register their guns? Do those citizens in those countries register their cars with their governments? Do those citizens in those countries build on their own land without any government permits or permission? Do those citizens in those countries have compulsory insurance laws? Do those citizens in those countries have to show their picture, ID, and papers upon demand to government agents? Do those citizens in those countries have to take balloon tests without search warrants for alleged drunk driving? Do those citizens in those countries have to take a portion of their workers' pay and pay it over to the government without trial or due process or condemnation proceeding? Do those citizens in those countries, are they subject to incarceration, or do those countries incarcerate those citizens without trial in a summary proceeding? Do those citizens in those countries have ports of entry that compel them to stop, enter, clear, and pay duties? Do citizens in those countries, are they subject to searches on their highways? Are those citizens in those countries arbitrarily arrested and their citizens forced to take or give their fingerprints? Do those citizens in those countries have to buy trip permits to use their own roads? Do those citizens in those countries have to have permits to cut wood in a national forest? Well, boys and girls, if the citizens of Russia, China, and North Korea can do any of those 16 things without government approval, without the government issuing those permits, they have 1/16 more freedom than you do in the United States, because all 16 of those are in full force and effect in this country. And it isn't an accident. It isn't an accident. So we should ask ourselves, who is pushing for these kinds of restrictions upon the activities of the citizens of the United States? Is it the labor unions that are pushing? Is it the public schools? Is it the colleges and universities? Or is it the American Medical Association? Who is it that is walking into the halls of our legislatures and the halls of our Congress and telling the legislators that we need to have a seatbelt law, a compulsory insurance law, or that we need a driver's license law? Well, boys and girls, it is the insurance industry that is doing that. If you want to know where the tyranny comes from in civilization, it comes from limited liability. And it is promoted by the limited liability companies. And it's not an accident, and it makes all the sense in the world. Think about it for a minute. First of all, we, the citizens, do not want to be responsible for our actions. Remember the story of the buckboard? You know, the Surrey driving down the road has a head-on collision with the Acme wagon. We don't want to risk the loss of our farm and poverty because we have an accident. And so we want to have auto insurance. Well, at least a lot of us do. Now, when we want this limited liability, what we're saying is that we don't want to be responsible for our actions. If, like the story of the drunk farm driver driving his 1948 GMC pickup, and the doctor who is driving his family to Orlando, Florida, to Disney World, and they have a head-on crash, we blame the farmer because he was driving drunk. He was in a regulated enterprise. But who was it that wanted the law that identified this guy as a drunk driver because we want to take him off the road? It was the insurance industry that did that. It's the insurance industry that gets these laws passed. It's the insurance industry that hires the lobbyists to go into the halls of our Congress and legislatures to get laws passed for the benefit of the industry. Now, there was a guy by the name of Dick Armey. He was from Texas, and he was a pretty powerful legislator in the House of Representatives. He's out now. He's retired. But Dick Armey, the last year he was in, I think it was 2004, was instrumental in getting a law enacted that exempted the pharmaceutical industry from lawsuits when it's been shown or it's caused that your damage occurred from a vaccine. Now, the only people that make vaccines are pharmaceutical companies. There are 16 of those pharmaceutical companies here in the United States, all 16 major ones. And if under the common law, this is the law of Moses, this is the law of God, this is the Ten Commandment rule, if these companies sell a vaccine, sell a product, and it causes you an injury, then you have a common law action against that perpetrator, and he has to pay you all of the damages. Now, the pharmaceutical company, they want to make vaccines, and they want to sell vaccines, and I'm sure they want to make you healthy by selling you these vaccines. I'm sure they have nothing but the finest altruistic motives in their laboratories and in their business. They just want to sell health to everybody. Now, as it turns out, though, these vaccines sometimes cause death. About 100 deaths a year are attributed to vaccines. It's probably 10 times that number, but that's what they admit to. Well, then, those 100 victims are entitled to get paid for that. Well, under the common law, they are. Now, if the pharmaceutical industry kills too many people and they have to pay out too many dollars, then pretty soon it becomes economically unviable to make and sell these vaccines. Now, there's only 100 people a year dying from it. Now, there's a few thousand others that are injured from it. Now, it would be just real neat if we had a law on the books that said, well, if you come in and you get a vaccine, and you die from it, you cannot sue the maker of the vaccine. That would just be a real neat law for the pharmaceutical industry. So Dick Armey gave them that law. That law doesn't have anything to do with the 100 victims that are going to suffer death or for the thousands that are going to suffer from the vaccine. That's a law that is enacted for this little small group of businesses. Now, those businesses all have insurance. And it's the insurance industry that's instrumental in getting these acts passed. It isn't even the pharmaceuticals. They're in favor of it, but they're not the guys that are driving it. It's the insurance industry that drives it. And that's because they're the ones that have to pay this out. So what we have here is Congress enacting a law to protect a specific part of the economy, the pharmaceutical industry, at the expense of the public at large. And they just stick it right out there in your face, and if you don't like it, what are you going to do about it? Now, after Mr. Army retires from the Congress, he goes to work for some insurance company, pharmaceutical company, steel company, auto company, as a lobbyist, and then he goes back into the halls of Congress getting paid 10 times more money to influence his friends and associates who are in Congress to enact these laws to benefit these industries, these companies. This is called fascist corporatist government. It's a government of corporations and big business, and it's driven by the insurance industry. Now, the reason that they don't have as much tyranny, you know, China's a tyrannical place, but they don't have as much is because their insurance industry is not as advanced as it is here in the United States. The more advanced your insurance industry becomes, the more tyrannical will be your laws and your government. If you want more and more regulation with more and more nanny government, then you want more and more insurance with less and less individual responsibility and more and more social welfare. And that's just the way the game has to be played. So it's a choice that you make, it's a choice that I make, it's a choice that we all make, and we have all made that choice. And we are the proximate cause of our own injury. Now, it doesn't make any difference how these questions are asked. Citizens of any country who are so constrained are not free. They are living under tyranny. And it matters not whether we have it better than the Poles or the Russians or the Chinese. Both systems are tyrannical. The only difference being the degree of the tyranny being applied and the understanding of the system by the citizens. Now, the Poles, the Russians, and these others understand that they live in tyranny, while Americans have been convinced that it can't happen here, even though it has already come to pass. Americans recognize tyranny in other countries, but in their own country, they refer to it as law and order. However, a police state is a police state is a police state is a police state. Now, there must be a solution that is simple, one that will free us from this morass of crime and punishment. And any solution must conform to our Constitution, quit punishing the innocent, and return to punishing the guilty. The current system does nothing more than spawn a system of recidivism, homosexual behavior, and prisons that are in reality schools of crime. They are not rehabilitation centers. Currently, victims lose their property, and criminals never make restitution to the damaged party, but rather they are deprived of their freedom, and the taxpayers who are fleeced out of their tax dollars to fund these human warehouses. The beneficiaries of this system are public defenders, lawyers, judges, jailers, prison guards, law enforcement agencies, and political administrations. They literally thrive off of this morass of crime and punishment. Crime does pay, and crime pays handsomely. And what is worse is that not only does the victim lose by having his property stolen, but he loses even more through taxes to the law enforcement growth industry to warehouse this thief. Solutions to the crime problem must provide restitution for the victim, punish the wrongdoer, decrease the prison population, cut out the overcrowding of those prisons that cannot be emptied, eliminate involuntary capital punishment, make the judicial system self-supporting, and make the entire taxing cost for today's criminal justice system pay for itself in productive accomplishment instead of the incredible waste of manpower currently taking place in our human warehouses. Now, how many broken homes, welfare payments, divorces, fines, jail terms, and broken lives are inflicted upon the innocent, the poor, the defenseless, in the name of law and order for the benefit of the law enforcement growth industry? And how many people derive their livelihood from the law enforcement growth industry? How many agencies are created by legislatures, city councils, and our national Congress? Well, in the state of Idaho, it would probably be conservative to estimate that there are about 2,500 people employed in the law enforcement growth industry in a state with about 1 million population. Now, that sounds like a lot, but consider the following. There must be over 100 policemen just in the city of Boise, Idaho, and there must be some 50-plus cities in the state which maintain a city police department and employ from 3 to 100 people. There are 44 counties. All of these counties employ a sheriff, plus some deputies and the support personnel from 5 to 100. The state police employs several hundred officers and support personnel. In addition, the state employs many varied special agents and agencies. Then we have to consider the administrative agencies which bring actions against their citizens, such as building, electrical, health, fire, welfare, plumbing, departments, and the like. And there's no way to estimate the number of federal agents swarming over the state. There are agencies like OSHA, the EPA, the Federal Communications Commission, the Bureau of Land Management, and so on and on. Then there is the jail and prison staffs and their supporting personnel. Then we have the judicial system at the county, the state, and the federal levels, and all of their marshals and secretaries and prosecuting attorneys and their support personnel. And then there's the lawyer workforce. And it should become quite clear that we have no idea how many of these people are employed by the law enforcement growth industry, because each and every one of these people are looking for lawbreakers to apprehend and to punish in order to justify their employment. Now, it seems as though it is the purpose of government to build a system of law and order so big that everyone will either be employed by law enforcement agencies or warehoused in prisons. It would appear that the citizens are simply being used by government to further that end. This law enforcement growth industry is nothing more than a business. Law enforcement agencies, that's the business, and the customer, that is the people of the state. It's a relationship. It's a guardian ward relationship. And like any business, this industry needs more and more customers to continue to grow and prosper in order to justify its existence and to justify the size of this business to the people in order to obtain more funds to further this said growth. Now, the growth cycle goes something like this. The chief of police comes into the legislature, in this case the county or the city council, and he says, we ought to have more laws. The executive proposes new statutes to the legislature. The legislature passes these statutes and creates a criminal act where none existed before, like buckle your seatbelt, buy this insurance. No crime existed there before, but now we got a seatbelt law. Now we have a compulsory insurance law. The executive branch has more statutes to enforce and therefore needs more employees to enforce the said statute. So we have to hire more policemen to enforce this new seatbelt law. After all, it's a crime to drive your car without a seatbelt. The executive then appeals to the legislature, that is the commissioner, city councils, for more funds to the increase in crime rate caused by more legislated crimes. And here in the United States, we have 2.5 million laws. That means we have 2.5 million crimes. God, the creator of the universe, runs the entire universe on 759 laws. 759. Runs the entire universe. Hell, you can't run your traffic system on 759. Every state in this country has more than 2,000 traffic statutes in your traffic code. That's just to drive your car, for crying out loud. Now, the funds are made available and more employees are hired. More employees have to justify their existence, and therefore government must find or entrap more and more customers into committing more and more crimes. Now, what we're getting here in America is a system where we have to fight crime by enacting more laws. When we enact more laws, we have to have more and more personnel to enforce them. When these police personnel go out and enforce these laws, they bring in more and more customers. These customers are called criminals, and so we have more and more crime. The reason that you have more and more crime every year in America is because that's what you're buying and paying for. Boys and girls, wake up and smell the coffee here. And if you've got 2.5 million laws, if we were to double that to 5 million laws, we would create twice as much crime, we would have twice as many criminals, we would need twice as many prisons. You're creating crimes where none exist. If you were to enact a law that said, you have to buckle your seatbelt, or we're going to prosecute you for violating this law, making you a criminal. Boys and girls, 50 years ago, we didn't even have seat belts. Now we have seat belts and we have seat belt crime. Are you really sure that you want to criminalize all of these activities and create all this crime and then pay all these people to go out and enforce all these laws? Now, if that's what you want, you have arrived. That's what you have. I'm just asking the question, is that really where you want to spend your money? Do you want to spend your money in taxes hiring policemen to put people in jail because they don't buckle their seatbelt, or would you rather take the same amount of money and take a carnival cruise? You know, it's your choice. Now, the reason that you don't have the money to go on a carnival cruise is because you're paying your money in taxes to hire policemen to go out and give people tickets because they're not buckling their seatbelts or they're not buying insurance policies. These are what we call victimless crimes. In the Bible, we punish people when they cause a damage to somebody's life, their liberty, or their property. That's the common law definition of crime. It's a loss of life, liberty, or property. We don't enact laws to compel specific performance and fine or punish people because they don't perform under the terms of the contract. You have to have a damage first. That's why we have a thing called standing in court. Remember the lawyer from Morton Grove, Illinois, didn't have standing, hadn't suffered a damage? Now, if everyone in the state could obey all of the statutes passed by the legislature, over 2,500 government employees would have no reason to go to work in the morning. In order for the sheriff or any administrator to justify their budget, they have to show expenses. So we see every year a steady rise in crime. We also see this industry exploit their self-generated growth problem through the media. And we are constantly bombarded about all this crime that's being committed. And the answer to increasing crime is more laws, more police, more prosecutors, more judges, and more money every time. You got more crime? Well, then we need more laws, more police, more prosecutors, more judges, and more money. Now, when you give these sheriffs, police chiefs, more laws, more police, more prosecutors, more judges, and more money, they will go out and find more people breaking more of those laws, and they will bring those in front of more prosecutors, more judges, win more convictions, and spend more of your money. Now, if that's what you want, stick with the program because it's working perfectly. No problem there. Now, if you don't want to buy more crime, then you want fewer laws. You want more individual responsibility and fewer laws. Now, we never hear how they propose to eliminate crime, eliminate prisons, eliminate jails, eliminate jailers, eliminate judges, eliminate policemen. What we hear is that we need more and more policemen, more and more judges, more and more jails, more and more money to combat more and more crime. Boys and girls, the purpose of a legislature is to enact laws. And when you enact laws, you have to enact penalties to enforce the laws. When you have a penalty to enforce a law, you create crime, because that's what crime is, the violation of the law. So the more laws you have, the more violations you're going to have, and the more crime you're going to have. What you want is fewer and fewer laws, if you want less and less crime. I know it's a wild new concept, but mull that one over a little bit, and I think you'll see how and where we're going. Meanwhile, let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about limited liability. It's the limited liability story. Now, you may be wondering, well, what in the hell has this got to do with the law enforcement growth industry? Well, stand by, boys and girls, and I'm going to show you that the more insurance or limited liability that you have, the more crime you have. Remember, the insurance industry came to us and they said, we need to have a law enacted that compels everybody to buy insurance. Now, take a look at the Obama company, National Healthcare. They did the same thing here with healthcare that they did with the auto insurance policy. What you do is you criminalize it. People that do not buy our product, our service, our goods, are criminals. If you don't buy our insurance, you are a criminal, and we're going to punish you. We're going to put you in jail. We're going to fine you. We're going to cause you grief. Now, it has been one of the fundamental elements of freedom that people choose, you know, the right to choose. You know, you ladies out there, you like to talk about, well, this is my body, and I've got a right to choose. And when you choose, you're also choosing life or death for that fetus. So in the context of law, when we're dealing with law over here, there's two sources of this law. You've got a creator God out here. You know, he calls himself God. And he comes along and he says, you know, I'm the final authority on law. We come along and say, no, you're not. We, the people, are the final authority on law. And so we have this fundamental difference of opinion here as to, well, who's making these laws here. So God comes along and he says, now, I don't want you people making any law. I'll make all of the law for you. He says that in Deuteronomy 4, verse 2, and Deuteronomy 12, verse 32. Don't you people make any law. I'll make it all. We come along and say, no, no, no. Now, that's not right. We will make all of the law, and we will take your law, nail it to the cross, and abolish it. And that's what we've done. Now, we have our legislatures, and our legislatures are out here busily making all of these laws for us. And now we're complaining about tyranny in this country. We're complaining about the nanny state. You got the government over here telling you that you can't smoke here and that you can't drink there. And, you know, we can't build your business this close to this school. And we've got all these rules and regulations. Well, okay. Somebody says, well, all of these laws and rules and regulations are done for good reasons. I don't doubt that. Shucks, I don't doubt for a minute that buckling your seatbelt is a good idea. What I'm questioning is it really a good idea to punish people because they're stupid and don't buckle their seatbelt? Now, let me just expand upon just that one little thingy over there. We're all agreed that seatbelts save lives and that seatbelts are probably good for you. I certainly don't want to abolish seatbelts. I don't want to tell you that you cannot use your seatbelt. Let's abolish seatbelts. But let me ask you this. Do you really care whether or not I wear my seatbelt? And if you're there saying, yes, I care. Okay, tell me why. Well, because if you don't wear your seatbelt, you're going to get hurt if you have an accident. But what the hell do you care? I've got a knife. You want to take my knife away from me? Because it would be better for me if I didn't have a knife. I can tell you right now, I am going to cut myself with my knife at some point in time in the future. I don't know when I'm going to cut myself, but I know that in the past, you know, I'm an old man. In the past, I have had a knife since I was 8 years old. I don't think I've ever walked out of the house, save on rare occasions, that I didn't have my knife in my pocket. I cannot tell you how many times I have cut myself with my pocket knife. And I know I'm going to cut myself with my pocket knife again in the future. And I know that if somebody wiser than I were to take that damn knife away from me, they could save me from cutting myself. But in the process, you would take away from me my ability to cut ropes on my hay bales. I need my knife to do useful, productive, and meaningful work. I have to clean my fingernails. I have to cut the bales, you know, hay bales. And I just have a variety of uses that I use my knife for. It digs out splinters in my fingers. And I find that my knife is a great tool and a great asset to me in my work here as a farmer. In fact, I find that it would be a great detriment to me if I didn't have my knife. But, you know, to protect me from myself, you could enact a law. It would be called the Farmers Knife Protection Act of 2010, which is designed to protect all the farmers of America from cutting themselves, causing themselves great pain. Hell, you might even save a farmer's life. I don't know how many farmers kill themselves with their pocket knives, but I'm sure there must be some. Can you see all the good that would come out of such a law? But I'm asking the question, why do you care if I cut myself with my knife? Does it harm you? Do you have to pay some money out of your pocket for it or something like that? Because I'm telling you people out there in plain language, I don't give a rat's ass if you cut your fingers off with your pocket knife. I couldn't care less. And I don't care whether or not you buckled your seatbelt. I don't care whether you kill yourself with your seatbelt unbuckled or you kill yourself with your seatbelt buckled. It's irrelevant to me. And I don't have any need or any desire to hire somebody and pay my tax dollars to run out and give you a ticket because you didn't click it. I don't want to spend my money punishing you because you're stupid and didn't buckle your seatbelt or because you're careless and you cut yourself with your pocket knife. I want you to be responsible for your pocket knife and I want you to be responsible for your seatbelt. But I live in an irresponsible society of people that can't buckle their seatbelts and can't keep from cutting themselves. So I guess I have to have my chief of police go into my local legislature and get the national, maybe we need a national law. We should have my Senator Kit Bond go into the Congress and get the National Farmers Knife Restriction Act enacted. Take my knife away from me. Protect me. It'll keep me from hijacking airplanes because you take my knife away from me. And I've said before, I think you could do a better job of keeping me from hijacking your airplane if you'd give that pilot up there in the cockpit a 45. And then when I come through the cockpit door with my pocket knife, he could shoot me and then solve the problem right there. That's a wild new idea, but just thought I'd throw it out there for you and see what you thought of it. Now, if everyone in the state could obey all of the statutes passed by the legislature, what we would do here is we would cause a great amount of unemployment. You see, the law enforcement growth industry relies upon lawlessness and criminal behavior for their very existence. If everybody in America obeyed all of the 2.5 million laws here, we would have a depression. And that's because all of the jails, all of the jailers, all of the judges, all of the sheriffs and sheriff's deputies wouldn't have any reason to exist. Wouldn't have any prosecutors. All the secretaries that work in all of the courthouses, all of the court clerks and all the support personnel, you know. Come on. We have to have crime. It's part and parcel of the American economy, and it's the American way. In order for the sheriff or any administrator to justify his budget, they have to show expenses, just like any other business. You know, you got cost of goods sold. So we see every year a steady rise in crime because there's a steady rise in laws and a steady rise in money to buy it. And we also see this industry exploit their self-generated growth problem through the media. And we constantly hear about all this crime being committed, and the answer to increasing crime is more laws, more police, more prosecutors, more judges, more money. And nobody has got a solution to the problem. So we pass more laws, hire more police, hire more investigators, more prosecutors, more judges. We spend more money, and only learn that next year the crime rate has risen by 5%. And what we need to combat it is more money, more laws, more police, more prosecutors, more judges. It's been that way for years and years. Now, it could be argued that there was a year when, in one or two categories, crime declined. But that's either a foible in the charts or a goof-up in the industry by falling down on the job and not selling enough product. Headlines do not exist stating that the Idaho prison population declines for the fifth consecutive year, or that the sheriff submits third successive budget with a 5% reduction in requests. We have been spending more money every year for more and more law enforcement, and since we spend more on the crime industry, we get what we pay for. We get more crime. Boys and girls, let's wake up here. I'm in the furniture business, and I want to sell more furniture, so I hire 5% more salesmen who go out into the marketplace and put our product in front of 5% more furniture stores. And sure enough, our sales rise by 5%. So now I go down to the mill and I say, we got to cut 5% more wood so that we can make 5% more furniture, so that we can ship 5% more furniture on 5% more trucks to 5% more customers who are selling 5% more. Now, I say, wow, our business is growing. And why is it growing? It's growing because I hired 5% more salesmen. Now, if I want to grow another 5%, I hire 5% more salesmen who go out and talk to 5% more furniture stores who sell 5% more product. Then I have to go down to my mill and tell my mill superintendent, we got to have 5% more boards so that we can build 5% more furniture, so that we can buy 5% more trucks to load 5% more furniture on and ship it to 5% more customers, so we're making 5% more money. Our business grows 5% a year because we create 5% more sales, and that's what's going on in the law enforcement growth industry. When we give them more money, give them more laws, they hire more people, they go out and sell more product, and we get 5% more crime. Well, that's the way the game's played, so let's wake up and smell the coffee. I'm not opposed to more crime. My God, don't write me a letter and say, you know, Gordon, you're un-American over here trying to destroy the law enforcement growth industry by shrinking crime. No, 1,000 times no. I'm just asking you taxpayers out there, is that really the way you want to spend your money, locking more people up in jail for more and more victimless crimes that don't have anything to do with you one way or the other? It is true that by creating the seatbelt law and compulsory insurance law and compulsory health care insurance law, that we create more criminals for which we'll need to hire more people to go out and apprehend those criminals, more judges, more prosecutors, and more jails to lock them up in. But I'm asking you, why do you want to spend your money locking people up in jail because they don't want to buy health care insurance, or they don't want to buy auto insurance, or they don't want to buckle their seatbelts? Why do you want to get involved in it to start with? You can, I guess, if you want to. Hell, we could go around here and create a law called the National Hat Law. And it we'll pass a law and require every man to wear a hat. And under penalty of law, we'll lock you up for 90 days in jail if you don't have a hat. It'll do wonders for the haberdashery industry. It's going to make a lot of employment. They'll have to make more and more hats so that more and more people can buy and wear more and more hats. And then we'll have to have a law that says, you know, a punishment that says, if we catch you walking down the street without your hat, we're going to arrest and throw you in jail. My God, you could have tens of thousands of men walking around without hats, for which we need hundreds and hundreds of policemen to go out on the streets and ticket these people, arrest them, apprehend them, lock them up in jail because they're not wearing hats. And it could well be shown that hats prevent skin cancer. So we need more and more broad-brimmed hats on more and more men to prevent more and more cancer. I'm asking the question, what in the hell do you care whether or not I get skin cancer, not because I'm too damn dumb to wear a hat? Now, all of the hat-making companies would like to have such a law enacted. Just like I said when I went into the committee, I said, I'd like to have a statewide waterbed ownership law. And anybody that's found not owning and possessing proof of waterbed ownership should be fined $300 in jail for 90 days, just like we fine people $300 in jail for 90 days if they don't have proof of insurance. The committee thought I was a lunatic, testifying before the Transportation Committee. Thought that guy Gordon's a nut. I can tell you how to stimulate the hat industry. What we need is a lobbyist to go into the Congress and get a guy like Dick Armey to pass a law to stick it on some writer bill over there that requires every man in America to wear a broad-brimmed hat or face 90 days in jail or a $300 fine. By God, that'll sell hats. But is that really the kind of law you want? Is that what you people out there want to buy? It's what you're buying, and you're getting it from the insurance industry. I'll show you how insurance works here in just a little bit. So, an example of the problem, let's take a look at City X, and let's assume that City X has 100 policemen. Today, the crime rate is up 5% over last year. So the media is told that the reason that 100 policemen could not hold crime to the same level as the year before was that the police force was understaffed. We don't have enough police to go out and capture all of these criminals. We're under budgeted. We don't have enough money. And there were some defects in the existing statute, so we need more money and we need more laws. So City X gets five new policemen, 5% more money and another 5% to compensate for inflation and so on, another government-created industry, and 5+ new laws to enforce. The product this industry sells is crime. So our product line has been expanded by X number of new laws, and we have increased our sales staff by 5% to 105 policemen who are now enforcing 5% more new laws. Now the operating budget has been expanded to cover the additional overhead. So our police chief, the sales manager, now has a larger sales staff, 105 policemen, and additional responsibility, 5% more laws, and therefore needs a raise. And so we give him a raise. Supervisors have a like gain and also obtain raises. Now we have to prepare for the coming year's expansion. So we must justify our expanded budget size and new products to the board of directors. That's the city council, the legislators, or the county commissioners, and our corporate chief, the mayor. The sales staff is sent into the streets to ticket more violators, arrest more drunks, catch or entrap more prostitutes and drug pushers. With proper management, we can increase our business by at least another 5%. Now, we continue to make sure that the media is aware of this growing crime rate. The media needs to understand that there is now more crime because we are understaffed and underbudgeted to handle this increase in crime. And besides, there are several loopholes in these laws that need to be filled. Yes, what we need are more laws, more police, more money. It's never ending. It's been that way for the last 100 years. And over the past 100 years, crime has been growing. We get more crime because that's what we're buying is more crime. This is why limited government, the government of God, limited, Ten Commandment model, is the system that doesn't eliminate all crime. There's always been crime, there is crime, and there's always going to be crime, but it's very limited because you've only got 759 laws. If you want to double crime, then what we need is to double the number of laws from 759 to 1,500, and then double our police force and double our budget, and we can double crime. Now, that's the way the game is played, so you ought to understand that. So that when the chief of police goes in and says, what we need are more laws. You know, every time I listen to these legislators, you know, they come up and they say, well, our economy is screwed up, so what we need is more laws. Excuse me, did it ever occur to you that your economy is screwed up because of the laws that you've already enacted? Has it ever occurred to anybody that maybe we need fewer laws, less government regulation? Get the hell out of my life. Leave me alone. I know it's kind of wild and off the wall, especially for socialists and fascists, to grasp that. Now, socialists and fascists make their living off of these laws. So it makes all the sense in the world that these people would be out here lobbying you for more and more of these laws, more and more of these policemen, and more regulation, and more taxes to support it. What I'm asking is, well, now you taxpayers, you feudal serfs out there, you employees, is that really the way you want to spend your money? Is that what you want to buy? If it is, stick with the program. You got a winner. Grows 5% a year. But if that's not the way you want to spend your money, maybe you might want to think about dropping out. Go do something else. Now, to illustrate the seriousness of the problem, the chief of police will recount some of the more horrendous crimes of the past year. See, he then comes in and says, oh my God, let me tell you about this rape. Let me tell you about this robbery. Let me tell you about this bank robbery. He tells you about all these god-awful crimes. As he says, crime is up 5%. What he doesn't tell you is that the 5% of the crime that's really logging on the books, it's, well, we're writing more tickets for people that don't have insurance on their cars and more tickets for seatbelt violations. You know, most of these crimes out here, just like the auto insurance industry that I've pointed out to you in the past, the auto insurance industry says, oh, my God, our claims have doubled over the last 50 years. And they're not lying. Hell, their claims have gone up from 5% to 11%. But what they don't tell you is that our premiums have gone up 25 or 30%. You know, they're not lying to you. They just don't tell you all the facts. That way, you will come to an erroneous conclusion. And your erroneous conclusion, then, will be what we wanted you to conclude so that you would agree with us that what we need is more insurance. We need more law enforcement, more laws. So just like insurance salesmen sell insurance by using fear of death to motivate the customer, the law enforcement growth industry uses fear of crime to sell their product. So another year comes and goes, and now we have 110 police. We have more new laws, and at least a 10% increase in our budget over our budget of 2 years ago. The product line is up by at least 10 items over 2 years ago, making the customer subject to a larger product line. That's more statutes, more laws. Now our increased sales staff can get back out on the street to find and trap more violators and arrest them to provide an increase in business for the county sheriff so he can likewise increase his staff and his budget. Isn't that neat? We got the same thing going on here in the building department. We need more and more regulations in the building department so we can have more and more building inspectors to go out and enforce more and more building regulations. In California today, it costs you people $30,000 just to get the permits to build a house. It doesn't make any difference whether it's $1 million house or $100,000 house. $30,000 is what it costs in California, on average, to get your permits. Hell, when I was a youngster, $30,000 would build the whole damn house. I mean, $30,000, you know, was a lot of money. Now, you know, if that's what you want, you know, to protect frogs and the environment and then fund schools and all the rest and fund, what you're really funding here is a humongous public service staff. It employs more and more people in government. Government employs about 10% of the people of America, about 30 million people. And they bring you all of these services that you people believe you cannot live without, you know, services like building inspectors. Do you know that oh, hell, 1950, we didn't even have building inspectors. How do you like that? And somehow or another, we kept in out of the rain. I had a roof over my head. House built, you know, the house I grew up in was built in 1884 and didn't have a building inspector. Can you believe it? Hell, that house is still there today, with or without the building inspector. Hey, I'm starting to run out of time here, so I'm going to have to give you a final reminder that you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. And the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.